So, good afternoon and welcome to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson. I'm the director of Friends of the Eel River. The EcoNews Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the EcoNews. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. My guest today is Chris Malin. Chris is a principal with the Living Rivers Council and the North Coast Stream Flow Coalition, which Friends of the Eel River and several other Upper North Coast groups are happy to serve as members. The Living Rivers Council has recently prevailed in a challenge to a state water board policy concerning the impacts of in-stream flow protections on groundwater. This is a complex and really important part of California's water protection picture. And I'm happy to have Chris here today to talk about it with us. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
So, Chris, take us back a little ways and just talk a little bit about what brought you to form Living Rivers Council. Describe your stake in watershed health and how you got into this work.
Sure. This started back in 2002 when I wanted to have more hands-on restoration and conservation of watersheds, in particular the Napa River. And I had been with the Sierra Club, and then I branched off with several other people, and we formed Living Rivers Council to help prevent the channelization of the Napa River for a flood control project. And we worked on Living River principles in flood management, and it was very successful. We managed to fight off the Army Corps of Engineers, and we established Living River principles and guidelines. And then we got into the issues of scarce water because we were doing monitoring in the Napa River watershed and a lot of the streams that we went to do snorkel surveys on and benthic macro invertebrate collection were dry and they shouldn't have been. And so we got into water diversions, and that branched us off into a whole area of the State Water Board's jurisdiction over water rights, which led to my working with the North Coast activists because they were experiencing the same problems with streams being dried up from over-diversions. And we formed the North Coast Stream Flow Coalition, whose focus is on trying to put water back in the streams, and Living Rivers Council is a member organization of the North Coast Stream Flow Coalition. And we focused on AB 2121, which is legislation ordering the State Water Board to establish policies and guidelines for the administration of water rights.
And we'll get into the in-stream flow policy. It's a policy that affects counties from Humboldt to Napa, including Sonoma and Mendocino and Marin counties as well. One of the key points in the case that the Living Rivers Council has brought against the State Water Board has to do with this difference between groundwater and surface water. And this is a strange distinction that's difficult for people to understand because, frankly, it doesn't make that much sense, I think. But maybe you could help us at least understand the strangeness here and introduce us to how California looks at groundwater.
Well, first off, groundwater is hard for some people to understand. Those of us that are activists, we're trying to understand it in detail so we can protect it. But groundwater essentially is percolated water from the surface. So you have, you understand a watershed, you get rain, you have climate, you have rain, which gets absorbed by the mountains and the trees and percolates through the soil and eventually filters down into many layers of soil and rock and forms basins deep within the ground. A lot of groundwater flows underground. You've heard people maybe speak of rivers underground or lakes underground. Much of groundwater flows just like it does on the surface, and it has gradient in it, and it moves, and it can move all the way to the ocean. There are some confined aquifers. They're not as common as aquifers that flow and move underground. But essentially, when you see a stream and you see the water flowing, that is really ground. There is course, stormwater and flows during storm events that hit the ground and then flows towards the stream as sheet flow and then gets into the stream and then flows through the stream and eventually out to the ocean. But there's a lot of water that percolates through the ground and goes into groundwater. So how we treat surface water is very important to the health of groundwater. They're very interrelated. People get confused and think it's separated, but it really isn't. It's a very integrated system. During the summer, when you're hiking on a creek and there's no storms bringing water in, that would be shedding off the mountains and the trees and the vegetation into the stream and flowing out to the ocean. What you're seeing really is the top of the groundwater in the stream. And if you ever have hiked a stream, and I hope someday that you will be able to, because it's quite an adventure and it's a beautiful thing, but if you go to the top of the watershed and hike as far as you can down a stream, you may think that parts of the creek are dry, but they're really not, because a stream can flow on the surface over the rocks and the bed of the stream and touch the banks, but then it can suddenly go underground. And it's not that it's disappeared, it's just that the stream goes underground and then can come back up again further down. So some people may say, well, my creek is dry, and then you might go a little further down the stream, and there you have water and fish again. So in California, this is very common, that streams can be intermittently in a particular stream or river. You can see areas that have water and others that go underground. But for the most part, historically, North Coast streams have been robust in their flows. And we've seen in the last 30 years a dramatic and very sad change in those streams. And they've become drier and drier and drier, not only because we have droughts, but we also are seeing climate change. But more importantly, humans are impacting the health of streams by diverting water excessively.
This is Scott Greeson. I'm the executive director of Friends of the Eel River. You are listening to the Eco News Report. I'm talking today with Chris Malin of the Living Rivers Council about the relationship between surface water and groundwater. Chris, you just laid out the connection between surface water and groundwater in nature. In the legal world, it's a little weird because under California law, the Water Board has permitting authority only for surface water in the channels we think of as streams and creeks and rivers, and to groundwater in what they call known and definite channels, where there is sort of an underground river. So that it's weird we have a state government that has jurisdiction, the ability to regulate groundwater, but that can't actually do so under current regulations. What's going on there? Why is California the last state to actually look at groundwater in this way?
Exactly. This is the dilemma. The California State Water Resources Control Board, the Water Board, but they are the state agency that has jurisdiction over several sub-regions of their regional boards, what they're called, and then they have jurisdiction over pollution issues with water and then water rights. So this Water Board has jurisdiction over the Division of Water Rights, which has jurisdiction over water rights, okay?
That makes sense, yeah.
Did I double talk there?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's
so
okay.
The Division of Water Resources has their department over water rights. And so what's happened in California is, you could almost say, unique, because all other states in the United States have regulations over groundwater except California. Now, since California's early beginnings, there have been water wars that have gone on. So, and that has not gotten any better. In 1914, the Water Board started regulating water rights. Presently, and this is really key with Living Rivers Council's litigation with the State Water Resources Control Board on AB 2121, and what the judge ruled is that the Water Board had to go back and redo their environmental study of the new policy document, AB 2121, which establishes guidelines and principles for the administration of water rights. We were able to get that remanded back to the board to more carefully look at impacts to groundwater. And one of the instructions from the judge was that he wanted the water board to discuss with the public the current authority of the water board. The current authority of the water board has many gaps in properly regulating groundwater and protecting groundwater in three areas is the authority over groundwater. One area is with the public trust doctrine, which is a doctrine that provides protection for the public to fish, swim, and recreate. Okay? That's one area. The other area is its permitting authority over subterranean streams, which is kind of a hard thing to kind of visualize, but I'll try to explain it. We all know what creeks look like, but underground, as I had described earlier, is groundwater flow, termed by the water board subterranean flow. And usually you will find subterranean flows deeper up in the watershed where you have bed and banks, and you could have some very steep banks that go all the way to the top of the ridgeline. Well, as that water flows off the hillsides and enters into the stream, it's also flowing underground, and there's a bed and a bank.
So those are those known and definite channels.
Yeah, that's right. The known and definite channels. Right. So that if a person were to divert water, say, punched a well 50 feet from the creek, they are essentially in the stream aquifer, okay? And that requires permitting to get a permit.
From the state water board, just as you would have to for a diversion from the surface water.
Yes. Right. So while AB 2121 does not permit dams in Class 1 streams anymore, historically up until 2004 or until currently the last couple of years when AB 2121 was enacted, people were damming up creeks and taking surface waters or pumping directly from the stream. That's very common as well. And that both in-stream dams and pumping directly from the stream flow is very damaging to the ecology of the stream and can be very detrimental to fish. So with AB 2121, the water board is encouraging people not to put in-stream dams and not to deplete water during the summer by riparian extraction, but rather to appropriate water off-stream. But the other very, very easy thing for people to do is to punch wells and to avoid the water board's new guidelines and restrictions on extraction of water, which requires environmental review and water availability analysis, where before AB 2121, people didn't have to do that. They could just file an application, and nobody protested it. And the water board, in their own review, determined that there was water available, would then give an application. But now, it's since AB 2121, the application process does involve rigorous study and analysis to make sure that the water rights application will not dewater the stream and that there is indeed water available in the stream for the applicant to get a permit, and then eventually they usually get a license. So as a way around that, people and the water board identified this, and so did the North Coast activists, the North Coast Stream Flow Coalition, many other environmental organizations, including Fish and Game and NOAA Fisheries, all identified in our comments during the environmental review of AB 2121 that people would go to groundwater. And the water board did an extensive study on groundwater by Stetson engineers. And Stetson engineers' study did reveal that people would go to groundwater and that this would then dewater the streams, and the whole purpose of AB 2121 could be defeated because AB 2121 was required to protect fish and other wildlife and protect the public trust. So if people went to groundwater pumping and didn't have to get a permit, it would be a huge misjustice of AB 2121.
So if you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson with the Friends of the Eel River. I'm talking today with Chris Malin of the Living Rivers Council about the relationship between groundwater and surface water, in particular how those two things relate under what Chris has been describing as AB 2121, also known as the in-stream flow policy of the State Water Resources Control Board. Chris, let me see if I've got this roughly correct.
I didn't give the third authority of the Water Board. I said that the Water Board has authority over permitting of subterranean streams and that the public trust doctrine
right.
was protecting of fishing, swimming, and recreation, but there is a third, which is the enforcement authority of percolating groundwater to prevent waste and unreasonable use and method of use.
Great. So as you've just summarized, the State Water Board has a certain amount of authority over groundwater, but it's a troubling situation because basically the in-stream flow policy is aimed at, as you've said, protecting fisheries resources and the ability of our streams and rivers to support fish in the face of diversions that in some cases have left streams entirely dewatered. But I wanted to back up for a sec and just let people know about that in-stream flow policy, as you've been calling it, the AB 2121. You know, it is an overarching policy for just a region of the state, from Napa through Marin County, Sonoma County, Mendocino County, and into the Mattole Basin of Humboldt County. It doesn't formally apply to the Eel River Basin, which, of course, makes up a big chunk of the middle part of the North Coast. But this, I think it's fair to say, is generally seen as sort of the template for the State Board's attempt to grapple with the issues involved in keeping water in the streams, given the more urban parts of the North Coast's impact on stream flow. How do you come up with a process that works, that's fair, that protects existing water rights, but does ensure that water stays in the stream for fish? So that's sort of the backdrop to this question that Living Rivers Council has raised with respect to how protecting streams from diversions can wind up having some unanticipated impacts in terms of people pumping groundwater when they can't divert from streams. So as you pointed out, the State Water Board has the ability to actually regulate groundwater pumping to some extent. But as we've said, the state of California remains very much an outlier in terms of its regulation of groundwater. And I wonder if you wanted to say just a little bit more about that and how far off we are from the rest of the country in that respect.
Well, I haven't studied all the other states, but in respect to attending the court arguments, the judge was, and when I say the court arguments, I'm talking about Living River Council's litigation with the Water Board over AB 2121 and the lack of mitigation that the Water Board failed to address with the public when water diversions start pumping groundwater. And the judge called us back into his chamber 3 times, and each time he spent hours going over and over, wanting to be very clear about the delineation in authority with the Water Board and getting the Water Board to clearly state their jurisdiction and their discretionary enforcement. And he very clearly was not pleased that it was so sketchy. And so I think he used the word Alice in Wonderland.
He did in his decision. Yeah.
Yeah. Alice in Wonderland. When will the Water Board step in and when will they enforce? And what are the parameters for their authority? The thing that bothered him the most is that the public doesn't know this ramification in AB 2121. Yet, the Water Board spent a ton of money hiring Stetson Engineer for them to understand it. But they buried the report and did not release it to the public. It's very political. Groundwater is very political. And I can only surmise that the Water Board did that because they didn't want to open a can of worms on groundwater in the state of California.
Well, let's be clear. The state of California is one of the few places in the United States where people who pump from groundwater don't have to report what they're pumping. So we actually measure the extent of groundwater depletion in the Central Valley most effectively at this point by using satellite-based lasers, not by looking at the records. Groundwater depletion is a real and very serious issue, particularly in the Central Valley. But maybe you could say a little more about, you know, why groundwater matters and what we're talking about in terms of groundwater depletion.
Well, groundwater is an essential part of the healthy existence of humans on the planet.
You make it sound so central. Yeah.
It's intricate to our survival. I mean, if we lose groundwater, we lose our streams, we lose our ability to use water to live. It's under the ground, it's deep under there, but it's part of the water cycle on the whole planet. And you deplete groundwater, you can have saltwater intrusion, your streams can go dry, people will lose their wells. It's just a whole host of devastations that can occur. And it's under the ground. People don't see it, but it's heavily used in commercial enterprises and, you know, drill deep wells and use water to supply entire cities. It's a commodity. It's a resource. It's very important to our survival.
Just to put a point on that, I was reading just yesterday on the internet about folks in the Midwest who are facing the collapse of the foundation of their houses because the extended drought has depleted the groundwater under their land to the point where they're facing subsidence. Now, I know about these issues because I spent a lot of time living in Tucson, Arizona, where parts of the city have dropped more than 10 feet from pumping out from under the Santa Cruz aquifer. But, you know, it's an issue that's starting to affect larger portions of the country than just the traditional desert areas. Chris, one of the things you guys at Living Rivers Council proposed as a solution, or at least as a partial mitigation for the problem you identified of people pumping groundwater when they're precluded from taking water from surface streams, is this idea of groundwater delineations. What's that? How would that help?
Well, Stetson Engineer mapped groundwater depletion delineation areas for all the five counties. And this is crucial to the five counties to have this information. It's going to be public now. They hid it before. But it's really in the public realm, and everybody can benefit from it because they mapped the areas of the geology of the underground in relationship to streams of groundwater where it's possible to deplete the groundwater and thereby deplete the streams. So there's this sphere of influence of where extraction can deplete the stream, where it's already at risk, okay, because of the soil layers and the depth and all of these factors. The reports are very engineered, and I don't claim to understand them, but I do understand the maps, and there's these groundwater depletion areas. So if a person applies for a permit to extract water, and they decide they don't want to go through the regional criteria of AB 21 for whatever reason, they decide to put a well in. Well, if they just go put their well in and nobody's watching and nobody has any authority or their discretion of enforcement is not going to prevail with the water board being that authority, they just put the well in and go down and extract the water, and lo and behold, the creek goes dry. That's the importance of this map, because if the map is out there in the public and people have to disclose to the public when they go for a water right application, and then we see that they're going to put a well in, then we can see if they're going to deplete the stream. That's the importance of the maps, because they will be available to the public to look at, and we will be able to determine them, and the water board will be using them. Right now, as it stands right now, the water board buried them, and we had to file a special order during our litigation to put that in the record because they didn't want it in the record so that we could refer to it as a mitigation measure during our arguments, that the judge could see that it was feasible for the water board to have a groundwater mitigation because they had already paid for it and hired Stetson Engineer, but chose to bury it.
So, Chris, as you pointed out, that having information available to the public is a critical piece in terms of being able to protect the public trust resources like groundwater and the stream flow that's associated with it.
Correct.
one of the points that you really bring out in this case and in your victory here is the failure of most of the counties in the North Coast region to address groundwater pumping in any real effective way. What really stands out there is that Napa County has, in fact, addressed groundwater pumping to the extent of its legal ability to do so. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the counties, including Humboldt and Mendocino counties, mm-hmm. haven't done so at all.
Right.
So that really underscores the need for local jurisdictions to address these issues.
Yes, and that was huge in us winning our case because the Water Board kept saying that they didn't have the jurisdiction to put policies and guidelines around groundwater in AB 2121, and that one of their key arguments was that this would have to be done project by the county. But the judge kept saying, but the counties don't regulate groundwater. And the Water Board said they could only go as far as they could go. They couldn't extend their jurisdiction beyond what the legislature had permitted them to do. But the judge was very concerned about the fact that there would be no protection anywhere because the five counties except Napa had a groundwater ordinance.
So, Chris, how do you see CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, serving the public in this fight? I mean, the backdrop here is that Governor Jerry Brown, a Democrat, proposed fairly far-reaching changes to CEQA in the legislative session that's just wrapping up. Those changes have apparently been dropped, but there remains a fair amount of pressure to substantially reduce the reach and impact of CEQA. It's being cast as a law that prevents development. How would you respond to that?
It would be an absolute tragedy if CEQA were tampered with in any way, reduce the ability of the public to step in and protect our natural resources, because the fact of the matter is there's not enough money in the world to give these agencies, these resource agencies, to protect our own backyard. It's too broad. We need the public's eye out there. We need activists and anybody who cares about the environment to be able to get information and have it be disclosed about projects so that people can go to public hearings, write comments, and speak up about the protection of our natural resources that are key to our quality of life and, frankly, now our survival on the planet.
No small stakes. So, Chris, where can people go for more information about Living Rivers Council or the InStream Flow Coalition?
We have the OurStreamsFlow.org, which is an excellent website for people to learn about public trust doctrine and groundwater and the state of the North Coast counties in terms of the health of our streams and what are the factors that are human impacts that are depleting our streams.
And that's OurStreamsFlow.org.
Correct. And Living Rivers Council is LivingRiversCouncil.org. So both of those websites. And then you can call me, 707-255-7434, if you want more information about the Living River Council's litigation that we prevailed on in the protection of groundwater. I'll be happy to talk to anybody.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's been a real treat talking to you today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been the EcoNews Report. My name's Scott Greeson, and I've been your host for the past half hour. My guest today was Chris Malin of the Living Rivers Institute. You can find more information about the North Coast Stream Flow Coalition at OurStreamsFlow.org and about the Living Rivers Council at LivingRiversCouncil.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the Public Affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Thereafter, you can find the files from recent shows posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can find Friends of the Eel River at eelriver.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as ever, to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the EcoNews Report.